Some people will tell you to play it safe. We're here to tell you that when in doubt, go all out. Welcome to the All Out Blitz. I am your host, JJ Wenner, and I am joined by my illustrious co-host, Doug Orth. How are you doing, my friend?
As always, you're too kind. I'm doing well, thank you.
Very good. Well, let's tackle the big news of the day. Rashi Rice appears to have assaulted a photographer at a nightclub on Monday. Now, this is the second incident this offseason. It's not looking really good. I can't wait to hear Drew's input on this, our buddy Drew Davenport. But what are you doing with him? Are you holding? Are you trying to move him?
Well, the age-old dynasty advice, right? You know, you sell high and buy low, right? This is not the time to be this would be a sell low moment. And so I think at this point you can probably expect a suspension, but if you weren't expecting a suspension before, you probably can expect one now. But this to me is more of a buying opportunity, but only if you're maybe a third round, late second round rookie pick. I'm not going because you have to factor in the cost of perhaps missing the year. I don't think that's going to happen, but the price is going down. So this is not a time to sell.
Yeah, that was my thought. I do have him in a few leagues, and man, I don't think you can get anything really for him right now. Like, I would not be willing to move him. I would rather wait it out and see what happens.
Well, the good thing here is most people probably got him in the second round. You probably got him in the second round last year, right? Second round rookie, right?
Yep.
There's a good chance that he's still your wide receiver four in those leagues, right? So it's maybe not. maybe it's a 50-50 proposition thing, but I know the one league I have him in, I happen to be stacked at receiver. So I have no incentive to move him. But even with this draft being deep in receiver, you're not going to get a Rashi Rice. You're not going to get value, commensurate value for him right now. So definitely hold.
And you know, what I've always noticed, Doug, is that there is always an uptick at one moment of optimism.
Yeah.
I would wait for that moment of optimism and then get the F out of your Rashi Rice shares, man. Get out. Oh, man. All right. Enough of that. Let's get to positive stuff. Today on the pod, we will be breaking down the draft from the perspective of landing spots. Where did our favorite wide receivers and tight ends land? And is it a good fit? Before we do that, I'll tell you what is a good fit. Our comprehensive 2024 IDP Plus rookie guide is here. Get the rookie draft guide for a limited time for $9.99. The latest version includes all of the post-draft feedback you need to dominate your leagues. So make sure to check out the link in the show description and download your copy today. Now, Doug, this episode is going to cover 23 wide receivers and 7 tight ends. Now, of course, the way my brain works in its crazy way is I'm looking at the ones you said you weren't going to choose. So you skipped a few names like Jamari Thrash, Anthony Gould, Bub Means, guys who had a little pre-draft buzz for us degenerates. Was there anything about the player or the landing spot that caused you to pass on them?
I think in each case, it has to do with landing spot and the likelihood of each one playing limited snaps as a rookie. Thrash is easily stuck behind Amari Cooper, Jerry Jeudy, Elijah Moore. I suppose the case could be made that Thrash, we could have included Thrash since Moore is set to become a free agent at the end of the season. But I also think Cedric Tillman's a better prospect, just as an example. And Anthony Gould's in a similar situation. He's now stuck behind A.D. Mitchell. And so even if he beats out Alec Pierce, he's still wide receiver four. And then with Means, I just don't see much upside for a third receiver in the Saints offense. And that would assume that he can beat out A.T. Perry, which I don't think he will anytime soon.
Well, that's a very legitimate answer. And I appreciate your take. That was very specific, sir. That's why I love you. All right, sir. Let's dive in then. At 1-4, Marvin Harrison was drafted by the Cardinals out of Ohio State. What do you think?
Yeah, so I just wanted to prepare everybody for the 30 guys that we're going to cover here. I'm going to give a landing spot grade, and then I'm going to dive into what would be some of the thinking here. So my landing spot grade here, one scale 1 to 10, was a 9.5. Why do I think that? Harrison is probably one of the most complete wide receiver prospects in recent memory. I'm not sure he'll dominate defenses right out the gate, which is obviously a tall order for any rookie, but it shouldn't surprise anyone if he's considered one of the top 10 receivers in the league as early as the end of next season, meaning 2025 season. You got Trey McBride commanding attention, you know, in the short and intermediate area, and you got Kyler Murray stressing defenses with his athleticism. So Harrison could actually find himself attracting less attention than he did at Ohio State when he saw double coverage roughly one out of every six routes he ran. I think fantasy managers can make a reasonable case to select him as a high upside wide receiver too, as early as the second round, although the third round would be more preferable.
All right. Yeah, you know, I just completed a rookie draft in a dynasty league. It's the second year. Super flex, PPR, and tight end premium. And Harrison went number 2 overall. So he went earlier than I thought he would, but I can't disagree with that spot for him. Let's move on to our next guy. Malik Nabers, drafted by the Giants at 1-6 out of LSU.
My grade, landing spot grade for him was an 8.0. This has nothing to do with his talent because his talent is pretty much rivals Harrison's. At his best, Nabers will likely remind New York fans of a player they see twice a year in CeeDee Lamb. Like Lamb, Nabers should quickly prove to be one of the league's best receivers after the catch. He may not be quite on the same level as Justin Jefferson or Antonio Brown in terms of quick feet, but he's close. He's probably going to spend most of his time on the perimeter with Wan'Dale Robinson around after he worked out of the slot most of the time. After Nabers worked out of the slot most of the time at LSU last year. But don't make no mistake about it. The rookie being Nabers will be the first read for Jones more often than not. I think a reasonable case can be made to select him as a high upside wide receiver too, as early as the third or fourth round this year.
Well, that sounds good to me. At 1-9, the Bears took wide receiver Rome Odunze out of Washington.
My grade here was a 9.0. And this comes with an asterisk or a caveat. I have absolutely no problem with him in a Caleb Williams-led offense, but it's going to be difficult for him to command 80-plus targets as a rookie in an offense that will probably force-feed Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. Now, my other analysis for that, Odunze was not a player that Chicago needed with Allen and Moore already on the roster, and there's not a lot of reason to expect that he will serve as anything more than a contested catch receiver for however long both veterans are playing at a high level. With that being said, Allen could probably be out as early as the end of this year. So if we're for Dynasty, he's still my third receiver solidly and with the upside for much more than that. On the plus side, his arrival likely cements the Bears as a team that will utilize 11 personnel at one of the highest rates in the league. 11 personnel obviously being one back, one tight end, three receivers. So I'm liking him. I'm thinking we're starting the season out as a wide receiver 4, but in redraft, I think people are going to push the envelope with him, and he's going to be one of the top 36 receivers taken.
All right. So the top 3 in pre-draft was clearly the top 3 in actual draft capital. Now we have a little bit of a gap to 123 when the Jaguars selected Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU.
Grade here was an 8.5. Now, I'm going to start with one of the more impressive nuggets I uncovered during my draft prep for Brian Thomas. On targets of at least 20 yards down the field last year at LSU, Thomas had 15 catches on 22 targets for 670 yards and 12 touchdowns. That's a 68% catch rate and an 80% touchdown rate on targets 20 yards down the field. Do you have any idea how impressive that is? I don't care who's commanding attention, Malik Nabers. I don't care who's commanding attention. You still got to catch those ball percentage throws. Jacksonville to a starting gig for Thomas by releasing Zay Jones shortly after the draft, and he should end up filling the role Calvin Ridley would have had Jones stayed healthy all last season. I fully expect Gabe Davis to run clear out routes and play on early downs as a rookie, since he's a good blocker. On the other hand, Thomas should handle most of the sideline routes that Ridley was forced to run last year. His size is going to play better in that. His size and his athleticism is going to serve him better than it did for Ridley last year. And let's not be Ridley's getting a bad rap for last year. He still ended up as the wide receiver 19 in PPR leagues. So there's top 20 potential, but Ridley's role is still valuable, even though it was highly inconsistent last year. With all that said, I'm not sure Trevor Lawrence can support three clear fantasy starters as of yet. So I would expect Thomas to be kind of a hit or miss as a typical third target in this offense behind Christian Kirk and Evan Ingram.
Very good. At 128, we had the Chiefs selecting Xavier Worthy out of Texas. Talking about a guy who catches a lot of his deep ball targets? No.
Yeah. Nice setup. Okay, so love the landing spot. 9.5 was it here. And it's hard to love. It's not hard not to love any guy that runs that fast and plays with Patrick Mahomes, okay? So love the landing spot. What I don't like as much is the talent I saw on tape. Anyway, let's be clear about something. While everyone watching likely knows that Worthy was the fastest player ever to enter the league during the NFL scouting combine era, which is back to 87, he is more than just a fast guy. He can run good routes. So I don't want to pigeonhole the guy. He's not just a fast guy. He's got other things. He's going to begin his career by playing with perhaps the best quarterback in the league and one whose arm strength can take advantage. Will allow him to show off his good stuff. That's the good news. Bad news is he's a 165 pounder who offers little as a blocker, doesn't create the kind of separation that you would expect for someone with his speed. And as you hinted, he didn't fare as well as a vertical receiver in college. Get this, JJ. 24 over his career, 25.5% of his deep targets, that being the 20 plus or more. That's 24 of 94. I had someone challenge me on Twitter before the draft, and he said Worthy had 40% uncatchable ball rate. So I took basically 40% of that, and it's still 41%. If you have that elite speed, you have even average quarterbacking, I would hope you could get over 50. That might not sound like much, but anyway. One would think with 4.21 speed that Worthy would have little trouble running past Big 12 quarterbacks. And for those that aren't well-informed about Big 12 defenses, there really isn't much in the way of defense in the Big 12 year after year. Anyway, for 2024, I would imagine Worthy will play behind Marquise Brown for however long Rashee Rice is sidelined with his likely suspension. However, I do think Worthy has weak winning upside whenever he plays more than half the snaps. I'm just not sure that's going to happen as often in 2024 as people think it will, with the caveat, so long as Rice, Travis Kelce, and Hollywood Brown are on the field together.
Fair enough. Now the surprise pick of the first. Not that he went high, but nobody thought he was going to sneak into the first. At 131, the 49ers drafted Ricky Pearsall out of Florida.
Yeah, this is going to be one of my lowest grades of the day. And it has, again, nothing to do with the talent, because I like the talent. 6.0 was my grade. Now, the goal of a lot of NFL receiving cores nowadays is to build one that almost resembles a starting five in basketball. You want a small and quick guy. You want a big one to get wins in contested catch situations. You want a fast wide out to stretch the field, maybe even a run after catch specialist, and maybe one who can do a bit of everything I just mentioned. I think that's kind of the goal of this pick. You've got the run after catch guy in Deebo. You've got the route runner and contested catch guy in Ayuk. Yeah, Pearsall is a mix between the player who can stretch the field and has the athleticism, 42-inch vertical, to win in contested catch situations. I don't know if anybody, I'm sure people that are listening and watching saw the catch of the year last year. Pearsall basically reverse one-handed, and then he takes a big shot. The guy can win in contested catch situations. I see some Christian Kirk in his game, although I don't know how he's going to see many targets behind Christian McCaffrey, Ayuk, Debo, and George Kittle. So initially, I don't like the landing spot, but if Ayuk doesn't end up signing an extension, mm-hmm. then Pearsall, then I'm going to say 8.5, 9.0 on the landing spot, but we won't have that luxury.
All right, sir. 132, last pick of the first round. The Panthers took Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina.
My grade here was a 7.5, and Leggett reminded me of a less freaky version of DK Metcalf when I watched him. Needless to say, Carolina needed somebody like him to open up the field for Bryce Young, since one of the Panthers' biggest problems last year was scaring defenses vertically. At 6'1 and 221 pounds, he can do work after the catch, and he's a capable blocker. There should be an opportunity to get him involved as ball carrier on jet sweeps and screens, which he did with some good degree of success at South Carolina. Leggett will probably end up accomplishing what Carolina hoped to do with this pick, which is getting defenses to back up a bit. But I do wonder if he will see enough playing time behind Deontay Johnson and Adam Thielen to be worth a pick in redraft leagues. In Dynasty now, I'm probably looking at the early part of the second round, second part of rookie drafts.
It's fantastic because I picked him up at 2.5 in my rookie draft. So
good value. Good value.
I was happy to get him. Thanks, Jameson. He gave me the suggestion. All right. Well, that was the end of the first round. We ended with the flurry of wide receivers, and we started the next day, day two, with another flurry. At 2-1, Buffalo chose Keon Coleman out of Florida State.
Not a big surprise here. Gave a nice 9.0 on the landing spot. There just are not a lot of receivers who can block, possess his size, which is 6'3", 213 pounds, 32-plus inch arms, and a 38-inch vertical. So why was he available at number 33? I'm going to tell you, I have two guesses. One, his 4.61 speed is mediocre at best for a receiver, and his route running is a bit raw. Number two, he wasn't all that great at contested catches last year with 10 for 30. Although that number comes with a bit of a caveat. He was 12 for 18 on contested catches at Michigan State before transferring to the Seminoles. I'm not sure. This is going to sound like an insult, but it's not. I'm not sure he can. I expect Coleman to beat out Mac Hollins in week one, because Mac Hollins is that kind of guy that is hard to bump out of the lineup once he's in it. But teams love the way he can get deep and block. But I do suspect Coleman is at some point, it won't take him long to take over. When that happens, I can see him being a capable fantasy wide receiver for.
Very good. With the subsequent pick at 202, the Chargers selected Ladd McConkey out of Georgia.
I'm not going to give any 10s in my grades today, but I gave a 9.5 to this one. So let me ask you a question, JJ. Mm-hmm. As a teacher, I'm sure you're a bit stingy when it comes out to giving out 100% to your students, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's my methodology behind not offering anybody 10s here. So it's hard to beat the spot McConkey. Wow, McConkey landed in with the Chargers on the surface. But my fear is that this offense will be so run heavy that not even Justin Herbert will be able to save him from being, will allow him to be a weekly fantasy starter. If this offense can manage even a 50-50 run pass balance and Quentin Johnston does not take a huge step forward, which again is possible since he was raw coming out of LSU, you don't know what a summer with Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman, a different coaching staff. Maybe he just didn't take to the previous coaching staff. You don't know. And I think McConkey has legitimate wide receiver 3 appeal this coming year. Having mentioned Harbaugh, I do wonder if he's willing to trust a guy that's 186 pounds, of course, talking about McConkey, or to block well enough to make him a full-time player right away. So, in short, I kind of see this going one of two ways. McConkey beats out Johnston so decisively in camp that he becomes the obvious top target for Herbert, or he offers so little as a blocker that he fails to see more than half the snaps.
Well, I hope it's the former and not the latter.
It should be.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
JJ, I'm trying, just as you well know, I'm just trying to give the potential scope of the potential wide range of outcomes with some of these guys. The top three that we talked about, probably there's not a wide range. The next 20 some odd guys we're going to talk about, probably so.
Which was the conversation during the pre-draft process, yes. Right? Yes. Like even where they're going to land, like it was such a variety. Like you got after that top three, maybe you had a second tier of a handful. And then it was like 12 to 15 guys kind of jammed in there.
Yeah.
So another one of those guys, right?
Right.
205, the Patriots select Jalen Polk out of Washington.
Okay, this is going to be my best effort at a backhanded compliment here, right? I got it a 7.0 for his grade. Here's the backhanded compliment. And I did like watching him on tape. I just want to put that on the record. He's the kind of receiver most teams need. He's a tough and strong guy who's going to block and will sacrifice his body and make plays downfield. Every team needs one of those guys. My problem with him is that I think he would have been a better fit on a team that needed a third receiver right away, and that's not going to be here. At number 37, when you pick a receiver at 37, you're hoping for a clear wide receiver two for your team and possibly a low-end wide receiver one. He strikes me as more kind of like a hint. It strikes me more of as a glue guy who will do whatever it takes to win, but I don't see an elite quality that screams alpha receiver anytime in the near future. However, I'm going to offer you a spoiler. We will talk about a receiver in a few minutes that the Patriots drafted, who I think does have those qualities. Anyway, I'm not really sure what Polk offers that Kendrick Bourne doesn't right now, for example. And I have my doubts that Polk can bump one of the top four likely target earners, being Kendrick Bourne, DeMario Douglas, Hunter Henry, or maybe even everybody's favorite from the last couple of years, Antonio Gibson, out of the passing game hierarchy in New England this year.
All right, sir. Now there was a little bit of a gap until 220 when the Colts took Adonai Mitchell out of Texas.
Yeah, so I was probably a little bit stingy with his grade. I went 8.0 here. I'm going to say, let me begin with the obvious. He has elite traits, 4.34 speed, 39.5 inch vertical, 11 foot 4 inch broad jump at 6'2", 205. All that. Okay, dumb it down for me, Doug. Okay, that makes him one of the most athletic wide receiver prospects in NFL Combine history.
Yep.
On paper, it looks like a marriage made in heaven when we consider he's going to be joining the supporting cast with John Taylor, Michael Pittman Jr., Josh Downs, and he's going to be catching balls from a rocket-armed Anthony Richardson. He showed he can be an alpha receiver of Texans at times, but therewithin lies the rub. Over 40% of his catches and receiving yards last year came in three games. He had three or fewer catches in 10 of those 14 games as well. He didn't do much with his few run after catch opportunities. And I'm going to stop myself here. So many of his catches seem, I call it static, like a static routes where you're not running when you're catching the ball. You're running in, or you run a dig and you stop, and then you have to restart. So many of his catches last year were that way. And you think, for one of the most athletic, well, prospects in this draft anyway, you would want him on the move. That didn't happen a lot. And then for all that athleticism I just mentioned here a couple seconds ago, he was 4 for 11 in contested catch situations. That's unexplainable too. There's also the small matter of Mitchell likely having no chance of becoming the alpha in Indy because Pittman's probably is going to be that guy for the next 2 or 3 years at least. So I see Mitchell as being kind of a high ceiling, low floor fantasy wide receiver five over for the next year or two at the very least.
All right. Well, let's move on to my beloved, because this is a Jets podcast.
It is a Jets podcast.
The Jets drafted at 301 wide receiver Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky.
So JJ, when I see you in Ohio, and I'm just gonna scream "Yak King," okay? Is that gonna bring? Oh, right. I like that smile. Yes.
I should get like a yak hat. I don't know what a yak hat looks like. I'm going to Google it later.
I think just put a YAC on there and hope for the best, right? I gave an 8.0 grade, 8.0 grade here. He's not your, as you all know, JJ, he's not your prototypical receiver at 5'11 and 215.
No.
Does not mean he lacks for upside, because he doesn't. The aforementioned Yak King lived up to his nickname last year by forcing a ridiculous 40 missed tackles. Insane. I think we know what his role is going to be, too. He played 91.6% of his snaps at Western Kentucky in the slot, which works out well because, well, Garrett Wilson and Mike Williams have the perimeter for at least this upcoming year. Bad news is the Hilltoppers, which one of the greater nicknames in college football. Well, the bad news is the Hilltoppers did not try to develop him much as a route runner. 32% of his routes last year. I'm sorry, let me check that. 32% of his routes in each of his 4 years at the school were behind the line of scrimmage. I think it will be difficult for anyone to expect him to be the true number two to Garrett Wilson anytime before the end of the 2025 season for the reason I just said. It's hard to develop route running, finely tuned route running skills in 1 year. So I'm going to give him 2 years, but none of this, what I said, none of that means that he can't contribute to the Jets right away if they use him in the same way that the Western Kentucky did. If they do that, I think you're going to see, people want to keep throwing this guy's Debo, or they're trying to find the next Debo. No one anytime soon is going to be the next Debo.
Right.
But if they use him like Debo, that's going to be the best way to use him at least this year. And I think the Jets are looking at 2024, and we'll figure out 2025 when 2025 gets here.
Yes, this is definitely a YOLO year. My only concern with Malachi Corley is to have manufactured touches, you need to have an OC. Jets don't have an OC who can, he can't scheme anything. He's terrible. But sorry, not to pontificate about
it. It's a Jets podcast, so.
It is a Jets podcast. All right, sir. Well, next up at 3:16, the Bengals took Jermaine Burton out of Alabama.
I've come around a little bit on this one. I gave him an 8.5. The reason I was initially against him because he didn't play a lot of slot at Georgia or Alabama. 25.7 of his snaps, actually, which, like I said, initially made me not care for the pick. Upon further reflection, I think Cincinnati saw enough from his 295 slot snaps throughout the aforementioned Alabama and Georgia to believe he was what the Bengals want out of that position after letting Tyler Boyd go as a free agent. I'm probably on an island in believing that Andre Yoshivas, thank you, Yoshivas, is the long-term perimeter complement to Jamar Chase after Tiggins likely departs after this season. But I'm not sure that affects Burton's stock much one way or the other anyway, if he is the next slot. In the here and now, I think Burton gives Cincinnati the quick separator it needs to complement its big boys, Chase and Higgins. I think he would need, with all that said, I think he would need multiple injuries in order to be a regular fantasy starter this year, but it's hard not to like him in Dynasty, assuming he can avoid the maturity issues that Nick Saban spoke about during draft weekend, and apparently there are several. But regardless of whether he is long-term or it's hard not to like him regardless of whether he's the long-term slot or takes over for Higgins. So maybe I'm wrong and Yoshivas isn't the long-term perimeter guy, and he is. Either way, whether he's replacing Tyler Boyd or whether he's replacing T. Higgins, I think it's hard not to like him.
All right. At 3:20, the Steelers selected Roman Wilson out of Michigan.
Yeah, hard. This one would have been close to a 10.0. if it wasn't for Arthur Smith offense, but it's going to be hard enough for George Pickens to be the man. So I gave a 9.0. Receivers with sub 4.4 speed, good hands, and the ability to change direction quickly without needing to slow down will always probably be in demand in the league. One part of Wilson's game that becomes clear almost immediately is his ability to find a soft spot in zone coverage. Very good at recognizing. Very good spatial awareness.
Okay.
A few of the things I did not like about his profile was how often he made a catch on a second reaction play. So basically, how often the initial route didn't work and he had to come back. It became a scramble drill. I saw way too much of that, where JJ would have to buy time, and then as he would be the favored receiver on that, primarily because he has good spatial awareness, but partially because he wasn't uncovering on the initial route. Also didn't like how infrequently he picked up yards after the catch, and his size, 5'11", 185. So those are some of the most notable negatives I had for him. With all that said, he probably blocks well enough to, despite his size, to hold as a full-time player in an Arthur Smith offense, and he's going to need to because Arthur Smith will run the ball. I don't think anyone should expect Wilson to be a one-for-one replacement for Deontay Johnson, but I think he's good enough to beat out Van Jefferson and Quez Watkins in camp. Assuming that happens, I think we're looking at a capable wide receiver 5 already this year. Just not sure he has more upside than that moving forward, given his expected quarterback play and being in a Smith-led offense.
The Smith-led offense curse. Hopefully he can turn it around as an OC better than he did as a HC.
Don't get me wrong. He is a good offense coordinator. He proved he was a good offense coordinator at Tennessee. I don't know why he was so devoted to. Yeah, he didn't focus enough on his why spend 3 first round picks on high end talent and then not use it.
Trying to prove you're the smartest in the room doesn't always work.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to 329. Washington now has its third wide receiver. The Buccaneers moved up to pick Jalen McMillan.
I'm going to give our listeners and viewers a little bit of a break here. I don't have much to say here about McMillan because of where he lands. 6.0 was my grade for him, which, again, I don't think I handed out any 5.5, so this is the lowest grade. I'm going to hand out. There had been some rumblings within the last week that Chris Godwin might be a June 1 cut, but I looked at his dead cap, and that seems highly unlikely. I think, assuming those rumblings have no merit, it's hard to wrap my mind around why Tampa Bay would spend a third-round pick on a likely fourth receiver. Okay. Given the fact that Mike Evans just signed his extension, Godwin is still he signed a recent extension, Trey Palmer's in his second year. I don't see McMillan. McMillan's a good receiver, but I don't see him beating out one of those three guys. Maybe, best case scenario, he's beating up. He splits reps with Palmer. But, okay, so now you're a 3A or a 3B receiver. Good for you. Anyway, with all those guys either recently extended or drafted, I don't see much of a path for McMillan pushing for a major role anytime before 2026. So we're looking at if you're investing on him, you're going to wait 2 years at least.
So that's a dynasty stash, not necessarily a redraft target. So at 337, the Commanders take Luke McCaffrey out of Rice.
I went 7.0 on the grade, and I probably should have, on further reflection, I probably should have went a little bit higher on that. But anyway, the Commanders have a screaming need for a slot receiver, and McCaffrey should be able to answer it. Perhaps the best part of his addition from a fantasy perspective is that he's not such an obvious target hog that he should steal much work from Terry McLaurin or Jahan Dotson. But he should be good enough threat to help Jaden Daniels pick up first downs and help the quarterback stay healthy. He does have some theoretical upside, this being McCaffrey. McCaffrey has some theoretical upside concerning he just moved to full-time 2 years ago because he was a quarterback at my beloved Nebraska for a short while. I don't know why we couldn't hold on to him, but that's another story for another time. But it seems like he's unlikely to be the kind of player that will push for more than like 50 plus catches for as long as McLaurin and Dotson stay healthy. So we're looking at a low upside dynasty stash here.
All right, Doug, that ends our day 2 picks. We move on to day 3. At 4:02, the Broncos kicked it off out of Oregon. Troy Franklin.
7.5 on the grade, and I'm gonna vamp here for a little bit. I did not understand why we saw so much pre-draft buzz about Troy Franklin. Okay. Now maybe he comes back and really makes me look bad, but I want to say I'm just gonna do this off the top of my head. I think 6'2", 176, some of these, and I don't just judge receivers based on size, but that's a lot of frame and not a lot of muscle to get off press and be physical and that kind of stuff. Anyhow, I would say perhaps the best part of him going to Denver is that he's going to remain tied to his college quarterback, Bo Nix. In my draft profile, my high-end comp for him was Robbie, the former Robbie Anderson, Robbie Chosen in his prime. And my low-end comp for him was, drum roll, his new teammate, Josh Reynolds. So head coach Sean Payton's offense is there's usually a clear vertical stretch receiver in the Devere Henderson or Robert Meacham mold. And I'm willing to bet that's what Payton thinks Franklin will become. And I do think he has more upside than those guys, but in Payton's offenses, those are again very clear stretch receivers. And I think I'm just gonna repeat myself. I think that's what Payton's seeing right now. The problem for Franklin is that he doesn't win with speed as often as he should. He doesn't win as often as he should with speed. And you'd think somebody with 32-inch arms and 39-inch vertical would win in contested catch situations, and that doesn't happen either. He was 14 for 37 throughout his career at Oregon. Worse yet, he dropped 10% of his targets in 2023. And 6'2", and he's a bit too frail. Like I said, 6'2", 176, that I think he's going to have to be a field stretcher.
It's interesting. I don't know if you'll be surprised at where he went.
Yeah, yeah.
In that draft I just completed, he went in the second round at 2-9. He went ahead of Corley, A.D. Mitchell. He went ahead of Polk, McMillan, Burden. I was kind of surprised.
Yeah. So I'm asking you to dive into the mind of your league mates. What do you think that's the Bo Nix hope, or do you think that's the I love Franklin as a prospect, and I expect him to overcome his situation?
I think it has to be a little bit of both. If somebody is reaching that far for Troy Franklin, yeah, they had to be a fan of his prospect profile, and the fact that he got paired with Bo Nix gave them like a mental little pop, right?
Yeah.
Maybe double counting, right? That now that he's connected with his college QB, who is responsible for his college stats. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I was a little surprised at how early he went there. Definitely some other guys I would have taken first before that.
Yeah.
But that's just me. But somebody we are excited about, at 4-10, the Patriots select Javon Baker out of UCF.
Once again, somebody was reading my draft profiles. All right. So there were a handful. When I do this every year, of course, there's going to be people that surprise me, right? Mm-hmm. Javon Baker was definitely one of the ones that I did. I had my 20 draft profiles, and then I probably look at anywhere, depends on the year, 15 to 30 more prospects after that. I just don't do a full 1,000-word write-up and that kind of thing. So anyway, forgive me if I go a little bit long on this one. Of the 17 receivers I studied the most, Baker graded out for me at number 5. His footwork reminded me a lot of Chad Johnson, and his contested catch ability reminded me a lot of Brandon Lloyd in his prime. Folks, if you don't know what I'm talking about here, YouTube Brandon Lloyd great catches. I'm just telling you that off the top of my head. You'll know what I mean, okay? For some of the younger people in the audience, those are high-end comps for a fourth-round receiver. I realize that. And I want to be clear about this. He has plenty of work to do to reach those heights because he kind of wins more with speed variance right now than actual speed. perhaps the easiest way to summarize Baker, and probably the reason that he was available in the fourth round, was that he has the tendency to make the easy look hard and the hard look easy. So the truth is that he routinely makes catches that only a handful of players can make. He also now on the downside, he faces a difficult path to crack the starting lineup. And you're saying, Doug, he's at New England. What's the difficult path? I'll get to that. You might not have much high-end talent, but Kendrick Bourne and DeMario Douglas are probably locked in 2-3 receiver sets. I think that's fair to say. After that, they sign K.J. Osborne in free agency, probably with the intent to make him the number three receiver right away. Juju Smith-Schuster is still there. And for those people, J.J., you'll hear me say that I hate the term draft capital, but it is a thing to a degree. It's just I don't think it's a thing to the degree that a lot of people in our industry make. Anyway, Jalen Polk was drafted two rounds higher than our boy Baker. So front offices like to look smart. So it's going to take that much more for Baker to move ahead. So he does have hurdles to overcome. The reason I gave him an 8.0 and not a 9.5 or even a 10, he's going to be catching passes this year from a Jacoby Brissett or a Raul Drake May behind an below average line. So I give you all that. Well, everything I just said, it's a tall order in and of itself for a receiver that wins deep a lot to now Jacoby Brissett can throw deep. So can Drake May. But now we're working behind a below average line and we don't have anybody taking the attention away. And so, and yet I think the natural talent is there for him to overcome all of it eventually. So if there's one day three receiver I'm willing to bet on becoming an alpha in this draft, it's Juwan Baker.
Interesting. I like that take. And I'm definitely going to keep him on my speed dial.
I'll tell you, JJ, real quick. I have a couple of dynasty leagues where I won't say I'm mortgaged the future, but I have a 312 because I won that one. I won that league. I have only a 312 remaining in one, and I don't have any picks this year in another. I'm going to try my best to move into the third round, which has been difficult for me to do. I'm going to try and move it into the third round and get him because especially the one I don't have any picks in, my team is getting older. And we'll talk off air about some of the receivers I just acquired, which I'm very proud of, but now it makes my team that much older. So,
yeah. Well, went at 311 in my rookie draft that I just did.
Oh, 311. Okay. 311. I've got a chance.
You got a chance. So you're saying there's a chance. All right. At 413, the Ravens selected Devontez Walker out of UNC.
I gave a 6.0 grade on this one, and the primary reason I wanted to include Walker in this write-up, given that grade, I think he's really a day two talent that slipped into day three because he had a bad week of practice at the Senior Bowl. I don't know how many of the folks out there watch the Senior Bowl practices like I do on NFL Network, but it did seem like the moment was too big for him. I just think he got into his head. He had a bad first practice, and then I think it carried over to the next two practices. He kind of started redeeming himself toward the end of the week, but a lot of scouts, there's Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday practices there at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, and most of the scouts take off after Thursday, after they take their planes to head back home, and they don't stay around for the game. So the last thing image that he left with a lot of scouts and front office personnel was dropping probably half the passes that came his way in practice. Anyway, so I think he's a day two talent that just had a bad week of practice. The other reason I wanted to include him is because there's a world where he's competing with Rashad Bateman for a starting job as early as next season, being 2025, if the Ravens let Nelson Aguilar walk at the end of this season. As far as 2024 is concerned, I think a bet on Walker would be a bet on Bateman and Aguilar missing significant time due to injury. That part is possible, and I think Walker is good enough to take advantage of it. But even if all those things play out, we're still working against Safe Flowers and Mark Andrews on a team that's going to run the ball with Derrick Henry. So we're looking at a third receiver on a team that's probably going to be run heavy. So he's got a lot to overcome. That's why it's a 6.0 and not an 8.0.
All right. So at pick 435, the 49ers select Jacob Cowing out of Arizona.
This is another one of those situations. Love the talent. Don't know what the immediate fit is. 6.0 was my grade here. So with Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, Juwan Jennings, and Ricky Pearsall in front of him, there's not really much of a realistic path for Cowing to see playing time. With that said, it seems like head coach Kyle Shanahan and company seem to burn a draft pick every other year on a smaller sub-4-4 receiver to stretch the field. Cowing might actually be the best of that one, that bunch. Denny Gray was the last one that I can think of, and that was 2 or 3 years ago. I think Cowing is much better than at least Denny Gray. Anyway, I think Cowing's maybe the best of the small and speedy receivers that this regime, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, has drafted. So I would not totally discount him, but I suspect he's probably going to be limited to punt returns and special teams duty this coming year.
All right, at pick 608, the Dolphins selected Malik Washington out of Virginia.
Gave a grade of 7.5 here. This Malik Washington was one of my favorite watches. Unfortunately, the addition of Odell Beckham Jr. here in the last couple of days likely makes Washington kind of a non-factor at the beginning of the season. But as I said, he was definitely one of my three favorite day three receivers. I'm sure I'm not the only one who noticed that head coach Mike McDaniel pushed for Washington for at least a couple rounds before he went 608. Major criticism for him is that he's 5'8", 191 pounds. That's fine to be critical of him for his size. Guy's got a 42.5-inch vertical, and the fact that he becomes a running back with the ball in his hands means more to me. JJ, you'll like this. Just remember, 5'8", 191, right? He forced 59 missed tackles over the last two seasons, and he led FBS last year with 35 in his only season at Virginia. Can you tell me who Virginia's quarterback is? Can you tell me anything about Virginia?
That was the home of the first settlement in North by the British in North America. I mean, you're asking a social studies teacher. We can have a lot of talks about Virginia and their effect on the democracy of the United States, but I don't think that's what you're asking me.
JJ, that's why we love you. That's why we love you. I comped Washington to a younger Jamison Crowder, and I believe he's the kind of player who's going to have the same kind of staying power in the NFL. Jamison Crowder, I believe, is going into his 10th year. He's been a special teams contributor, and he's always had some really good offensive seasons. I think we're talking about Washington being that kind of player. In dynasty leagues with 25-man rosters and rookie drafts lasting longer than three rounds, I think he needs to be added. I know the dynasty leagues I'm in have three-round rookie drafts. If he's available, I'm stashing him. Basically, pretending like I had the 401, but using my fab to do it. And so, I believe I mentioned earlier about having some old receivers in my dynasty leagues. Washington is the kind of free guy off waivers that I'm going to be looking for to add. And maybe OBJ doesn't stay healthy again this year. I think as soon as OBJ goes down, it's Washington time. Now you got Tyreek Hill, you got Jalen Waddle. We're not talking about 80 catch upside here. I'm not trying to sell you that, but I think we just talked about his not too long ago about his run after catch and his ability to break tackles. They're going to love him in Miami.
Well, not to break your heart, in the rookie draft I just completed, he went 312. So your 401 waiver was not going to happen in that league. You're going to have to. He went one pick after Javon Baker, so you might have to move up to the back of the third round to get your boys.
I have to buy two late third round picks. Come on, JJ. I don't have that kind of cap. Come on.
Well, I'll trade you Rashee Rice. Maybe you can trade him for one of those two picks. All right, sir. Two wide receivers left to cover at 609. Johnny Wilson got selected by the Eagles out of Florida State. Tell me about the giant wide receiver.
Yeah, and so I lied to the audience. I didn't think I had anything lower than a 6.0. I gave him a 5.0. So, Doug, why is he on here?
Okay. So, Doug, why is he on there?
Okay. I don't know how Wilson does anything meaningful in fantasy anytime soon. A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith there. You got Dallas Goedert. You got Saquon Barkley. But to me, the talent is too much to ignore. 6'6 and 231, okay? To me, the natural inclination is just hearing that, oh, got to move him to tight end. No, no, no. He runs like a much smaller guy. So we don't want him transitioning to tight end. So I put on my thinking cap. What would I do? I'm thinking maybe something along the lines of a big slot in the Marquez Colston role down the road. Now, whether that comes to fruition, I don't know. But you'd be surprised at 6'6", 231 pounds, how fluid he is. It's I don't remember seeing a guy like him. He's more fluid than Plaxico Burress. I know Plaxico Burress was pretty fluid for his size. Mm-hmm. Anyway, in a draft class full of unique talents at receiver, his profile may be the most unique. And I'll give you a for example here. His testing numbers were remarkably similar to Roma Duthe's, even though he's 4 inches taller and 20 pounds heavier. So I mentioned the Colston thing. I think his best case scenario, short and long term, is to show enough in camp to convince Kellen Moore, the new offense coordinator, to use him as a big slot in the Colston mold. And even better part of it, he's even more of a physical freak when you consider he has a 37-inch vertical and 35.5-inch arms. Now, I want to tell you, the bare minimum that you want for an offensive lineman is 32-inch arms. He's a receiver that has 35.5-inch arms. That's great. That's great for an offensive lineman. You're putting that on a 6'6 guy with almost a 40-inch vertical. You don't think he's going to be a good red zone target right away? Maybe that's all he becomes, but maybe he has 20 catches and 5 touchdowns or 6 touchdowns at the end of this year. I don't know, but I think the Eagles did themselves a service by just drafting him and figuring it out later.
Well, they have the leeway with the weapons that they have.
Yeah, exactly.
Luxury, I should have said. The luxury of waiting.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, our final wide receiver at 7:05. The Chargers picked Brendan Rice out of USC.
Yeah, he gave me a 7.0 grade here. And kind of like we were talking with New England, as bad as the Chargers depth chart looks right now after trading Keenan Allen and releasing Mike Williams, you kind of have to believe that they're going to give Quentin Johnston and Josh Palmer every chance to keep those perimeter receiver roles and maybe initially let Ladd McConkey work in the slot, and if McConkey really impresses, then maybe he overtakes Johnston if Johnston really has a bad camp or something. Anyway, at worst, I think Brendan Rice takes over for Josh Palmer after this year when Palmer's contract expires. At best, I think he shows why he was Caleb Williams' favorite target last year at USC, and he ends up being the bigger body complement to McConkey later in the season. Maybe they just completely... The way I see I see the Chargers being competitive, but I don't see them being a winning team. And maybe at the end of the year, they decide to go full kind of youth movement. Maybe Quentin Johnston isn't developing at all, and we're just saying, okay, we're going to go with the rookies. Show us what you have, so we know what we have going on to next year. So I wouldn't usually hype. Not that I'm hyping up, but not. I usually wouldn't promote too much. Seventh rounder too much, but right. there is opportunity here.
Well, Doug, thank you for your input on all these different landing spots. And if you want a landing spot that Doug would rate a 10.0, check out Expedia, because we are thrilled to announce our new partnership with your one-stop shop for the best prices in the travel world, Expedia. With Mother's Day on the horizon, Expedia is the place to make it special for the mom in your life. Get 10% or more off at over 100,000 hotels worldwide and 30% off when booking a flight with your accommodations. Check out the show description for the link and get your next adventure planned today. Now, Doug, we're moving on to tight ends now, and Brock seems to suck all the air out of the room when we discuss the tight end class. Now, how would you grade this tight end class overall if we removed him from the conversation?
Wow. Yeah, if you removed him from the conversation, then you're talking about a – I think we have some underrated talent here, but you're looking at a pretty marginal – I think marginal is the right word. There is some upside beyond Bowers, but it's – whereas Bowers, I think we can say, is a very good, if not one of the better prospects this century. You're looking at guys that you hope will be starting in 5 years. And then we'll see. But anyway, I don't – very very average to answer your question relatively quickly.
Yep. Basically, that's what I saw. Once he was out of the room, it's like, eh. Definitely no first round picks, barely a second round pick.
And that's what the teams told us too, because after there was one tight end in the second round and we didn't see another one until 401. So yeah. Yep.
Well, sir, let's go ahead and get the golden goose at 113. We had Brock Bowers going to the Raiders out of Georgia.
So, JJ, I don't want you to be the only guy that makes those smooth transitions. You know who didn't need Expedia? Brendan Rice. Brendan Rice did not need Expedia. You know who did need Expedia? Brock Bowers, going from Georgia to Vegas.
It's a long how do you drive.
Like? How do you like? Landing spot. I gave him an 8.0. And the only reason this landing spot is not a perfect 10 is because, as most of us well know already, Las Vegas invested a second round pick in one of the most complete tight ends last year in Michael Mayer. However, I still like the pick because Bowers, if used correctly, could be the most impactful non-quarterback to come out of this draft. His fit in Vegas may not seem great when you consider Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell are vying for the starting quarterback job, and new offensive coordinator Luke Getsy needs to feed Devontae Adams and Jacoby Myers. Great thing about Bowers, though, is he's essentially an oversized slot receiver who should spend about half of his time if Getsy wants to maximize his new toy. With defenses playing zone about 75% of the time now, and I think it was 74.1 is what I read, 74.1% zone across the league now, it becomes a huge advantage having a tight end who can mask some of his quarterback's weaknesses and turn a short throw into a big play as often as Bowers can. And let me tell you, when the guy is healthy, it seems like every other play he's breaking two tackles and going for 20 yards. It's uncanny. It is uncanny. So even in what appears to be a bad situation currently, to me, Bowers should be considered no worse than a low-end tight end one in this year, and I still think he's worthy of a top five pick in rookie drafts.
All right. At 221, as you said, the second wide receiver to go.
Tight end, sorry.
To the Commanders, Ben Sinnott out of Kansas State.
Went with an 8.5 on this one. And I really don't know how to grade this. Why? Why, Doug? It's difficult to analyze what his impact is going to be for one simple reason. And this is a question, but it's not a question directed to you here. Did new general manager Adam Peters draft him to be the Swiss Army knife that he saw Kyle Juszczyk become in San Francisco? Or did new offense coordinator Cliff Kingsbury push for him because he believes he's the logical successor to Zach Ertz? I can see it go both ways. That's how versatile this guy is. As always, there's a distinct possibility he ends up being both, in which case he's worth stashing in redraft and taking high-end rookie drafts, since it is entirely possible Ertz, who they did sign this offseason, doesn't have anything left I think he turns 34 in October or November of this year. So it's very possible he doesn't have anything left. Anyway, short of Ertz showing literally nothing in camp, I would expect Senat's impact to be felt much more in 2025.
Fair enough. At pick 401, the Panthers took Jatavion Sanders out of Texas.
Went with a 7.5 for a grade here, and he was widely considered to be the second best tight end prospect in this class, so it shouldn't come as a surprise he has a realistic shot of beating out Tommy Tremble and or Ian Thomas for a starting job at some point this year. To me, I saw a lot of Gerald Everett, and I think he should at the very least be able to form a tight end committee during camp in a worst-case scenario. Reason I'm lukewarm on him is that it might be too much. You know, I'll talk about why this is the case here pretty soon. The reason I'm lukewarm on his prospects is that it might be too much to ask a short quarterback. I think Bryce Young is, what, 5'11", 5'10"? Might be too much to ask him to work the middle of the field consistently. Perhaps Young won't have the same problem Russell Wilson has in that regard, but if you think back to all the years Russell Wilson's played, it's been he'll get his tight ends touchdowns, but they never seem to be big target earners. But so having said all that, I want fantasy managers out there to – I don't want you to discount Sanders entirely, but I want you to understand that it should be a strong consideration that Sanders may be a great tight end prospect, but he won't ever see the ball because he's working the middle of the field in for a short quarterback. Anyway, if Young proves he can work the short area of the field, then Sanders has a chance. And this is another nugget for you. His 346 yards after the catch last year were the fourth most by a tight end in college. So if Young can find him underneath, then he has a chance to be a low end tight end one someday.
Would you ever take him in redraft?
Not this year.
All right, sir. At 407, the athletic freak. I don't like using that word, but the athletic marvel of the combine. The Giants take Theo Johnson out of Penn State University.
Well, sometimes athletic freak is justified, and let me tell the listeners and the viewers out there why. 6'6", 260 pounds, sub 4'6", and he can jump. He's got a vertical jump of 40 inches. That qualifies as an athletic freak, JJ. It sounds like me back. It sounds like me back in high school, but
no, it does. No, because if you were, you wouldn't be on this podcast with me, my friend.
So I think it should be obvious to those people that remember Darren Waller from 5 years ago. The Giants still don't know the status of Waller, so they were entirely justified in selecting the closest thing to Waller this draft had to offer. I just spoke about his athleticism. Needless to say, he enters the league as one of the best athletes at his position. Like most rookie tight ends, however, I think he's probably a little too raw to count on for year one contributions. But that talent profile is one you want to bet on, and I think he has enough talent to overcome it, and he doesn't face a great deal of competition for targets in New York after Malik Nabers, especially if Waller retires. Johnson's probably a better bet to produce in 2025, though, and more of a stash in dynasty than he is a potential breakout star in redraft.
All right, at 415, the Bengals selected Eric All out of tight end U. Iowa.
That's right. I hope I'm wrong about this. Let's put it that way. As a Nebraska fan, I'm programmed to root against Iowa, but I want to be wrong about this, actually. But anyway, 7.0 for the grade. Redraft, redraft people out there, there's not much of an immediate need at tight end right now after Cincinnati signed Mike Gesicki this offseason. But it has been a while since Gesicki made much of an impact in the league. Maybe Joe Burrow brings it out of him. I don't know. Drew Sample is the backup tight end there. He's primarily the blocker. So if Gesicki doesn't break through and Sample's going to really remain a blocker. I'm sorry. So that gives All a chance to break through and claim a starting job at some point. His biggest issue has been durability, not talent. What I believe is, I think he ends up replacing Drew Sample after this year, especially since Sample can be cut at no cost to the team next spring. So, and we'll talk about a guy here in a second that I think is going to, they're going to be the tag team combo that I think the Bengals want Gesicki, what they want Gesicki and Sample to be this year. I think these two guys are going to be that combination moving forward.
Well, you didn't give any spoiler alerts, but at 6'18", the Bengals also selected tight end Tanner McLaughlin from Arizona.
Well, we've moved from a Jets podcast to a Bengals podcast. So
I didn't realize that.
I gave McLaughlin a slightly higher grade, 7.5, because what we focus on this podcast and in this industry are stats and fantasy, right? And I think McLaughlin has a better chance of producing those stats than Aul does. Anyway, just about everything I said about Eric Aul applies to McLaughlin here. I think there's a decent chance the Bengals, and I just said this, the Bengals view Aul and McLaughlin as their future tight end committee beginning next year. I think McLaughlin is in a better position to handle more passing game work down the road, only because Aul is probably the better blocker right now, and McLaughlin is so dependable as a pass catcher. He had zero drops and 55 targets last year. Just remember, both players will likely play behind Gesicki and Sample this year, so expect one or both to be inactive on game day during the early part of the season.
All right. Our last tight end was drafted at 7-11. That's because he's open 24-7, baby. The Patriots selected Jaheim Bell out of FSU.
Well, we talked about my athletic profile in high school. 7-11 was your nickname in high school because that's all you did in football was get open, right?
Football? I was in the band, brother.
Oh, whatever. Tell the viewers of your athletic prowess. Come on.
Yeah, I don't have any.
I gave Bell an 8.5, and you're going to say that's pretty high for a guy drafted in the middle or early part of the seventh round. I get it. I think New England is hoping Bell could become the player it hoped that it was getting on Jonnu Smith a few years ago. I think at 6'2 and 240 with 4.61 speed and good run after catch ability, he had 8.1 yards after the catch per reception at Florida State last year. Pretty impressive for a tight end. Yeah. I think he could give the Patriots some free yards that no other tight end on the roster can. If for people that watched a little bit of the Texans over the last few years, think Brevin Jordan as a reasonable comp for him. Most likely, he's going to be the third tight end this year, and I think he's going to replace Austin Hooper as the number two behind Hunter Henry once Hooper's one-year contract expires at the end of this year.
Well, the landing spot in the future might be a 10.0. I'll tell you what else is a 10. Your mom. That's right, and Mother's Day is almost upon us, friends. So don't get put in the doghouse with a boring gift. Trophy Smack has fully customizable belts and rings for the special mom in your life. Tell her she's the best with a flashy token of your appreciation and make all the world's best mom's coffee mug givers run and hide. We only have a few weeks left until the big day, folks. Head over to trophysmack.com now. And use the promo code IDPGuys, one word, to get a free championship ring with the purchase of a custom trophy or belt. Check out the link in the show description and win Mother's Day. Well, so long farewell. Alfieder saying an adieu. It is time for us to say goodbye. Doug, where can the good people find you, and what do you have cooking?
Cooking. I have literally nothing cooking outside of doing some background work for the start of my content series in early June. So I'll go ahead and get some articles hopefully written, get a couple weeks of leeway so I can have some fun this summer. But you can find me just like it says on the screen here at DOUGORTH. All my content is at FF Today. Published my rookie rankings for Superflex and one quarterback leagues. Please feel free to check those out and hit me up with any controversial, you know, if you have a problem with any of my rankings, please let me know about it, because we're here to have a discussion, JJ.
Absolutely. I'm at JJ Wenner on Twitter. You can catch me on the Rider Dynasty podcast this Friday with Joe as we conduct a 2-round IDP only rookie draft. Special thank you to the whole crew at IDP Plus for helping produce the pod. Thank you to Doug for all of his hard work and for enlightening me about so much rookie information that I wish I had when I just finished a rookie draft. But be sure to tune in next week on Wednesday when Doug and I break down rookie draft strategies. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, when in doubt, go all out. Boat drinks, my friends.